So this is the second episode of our series here at Gale Strategies, The Definers. And I am super excited to have Mike Trinkus here, our client at Four Pines Fund Services. And in case it weren't obvious, we call the series The Definers because we love to work for companies and individuals that are actively defining the future of their particular industry or an aspect of their industry. And what we mean by that is pursuing a business model that is, disruption is an old and maybe tired word, but is changing the industry. And then also because we're, marketing and communications folks, leading the industry actively in the thought leadership of not just doing the thing, but also helping to articulate and explain it and bring together a movement. And Mike here is an embodiment of what we get excited about. And we find ourselves often talking to folks in our network or other clients and saying, you should look at this guy, Mike Trinkus, and the team at Four Pines. They're doing something particularly interesting. So we're going to ask Mike about that, and we're going to zero in on one thing in particular that folks in our network have, I think, been excited about and asked us about. And we've pointed to Mike so many times that we wanted Mike to actually come on in person and explain it himself instead of us being the filter. But talking about something that your competition is unwilling to say or can't say. Fans of Hamilton Helmer may be familiar with counterpositioning. There's elements of this. So, Mike, I didn't put this in the questions, but I just realized, can you do a quick intro of who Four Pines is?
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, Chris, thanks for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. I'll first say that I've never thought of certainly myself and us at Four Pines as a definer or anything along those lines. But it has been a really interesting journey to watch what we've been able to do with you guys around certain aspects of the message that we want to get out there and how that's currently making its way through the market. So that is pretty exciting, and can't wait to dig into that a little bit. But who we are, we're a fund administrator. We do back, middle, front office work for typically venture capital firms in the private equity space, buyout firms, secondary shops, fund of funds. We do a little bit in the credit and real estate space as well. But we're essentially a managed services firm with a little bit of a hint of a technology angle as well, because we're very, very big on using technology in efficient and effective ways. But very big picture, that's kind of who we are. And we care about people first and foremost, and we couple that again with that technology piece.
And before Four Pines, you are a former CFO. One of your co-founders, Celeste Barone, is a former CFO of Portfolio Advisors, and Celeste, I think, came from Common Fund.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So essentially, we're a group of executives that came together through a variety of different careers. Celeste and I both came from the PE industry, both having spent a number of years as CFOs in the space. Our COO has an engineering background, did a lot of contract manufacturing, ran global teams around his in his career. Our CTO is an expert in automation that came from IBM, and then our head of product is a longtime fintech guy. So we really brought together those collective experiences to kind of end up where we are today with this philosophy and vision and strategy that we have at Four Pines.
And you are a fund administrator with a CTO, which in of itself is fascinating. Maybe I'll come back to that in a second. So the thing that you talk about that other fund administrators sometimes talk about, but not with the clarity and with the sort of bravery that Four Pines does, and that's co-sourcing. So can you explain what co-sourcing is?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. The definition of co-sourcing is an evolving one for me. I think about this a lot because I do get asked the question a lot of what exactly it means. And what I've done, over time is I've started to parse this into two places. There's sort of this holistic definition, which is a bigger picture, broader concept that I'll talk about in a second. And then there's sort of the everyday operational piece. So let me start with the bigger picture, holistic piece. Co-sourcing is part of a broader vision that we have around the industry in and of itself, and where we think the industry needs to go and shift towards as the market changes, as the industry changes. So as you start focusing on partnering with your clients, really truly collaborating with your clients and doing things that incentivizes each other to work together in the same direction, as opposed to what we've historically done in this space, which is I go behind the curtain on this side, I do the stuff I'm supposed to do, you sit on this side, you hope that I'm doing the stuff that I'm supposed to be doing, and you hope that it's right, and you hope that I meet the deadlines without any visibility into what we're doing at all. So we want to redefine what all of that means. So as part of the redefining what we think the fund admin business should be going forward, we've landed on one of the aspects, which is co-sourcing. So on that operational level, the definition of co-sourcing is very quite simple. We want to partner with our clients. We want to collaborate with our clients. So one of the best ways that we think to do that is to jump into the software tech stack of our clients, and in particular, their accounting technology platform. And what that does is it kind of opens up the power dynamic a bit in the relationship. Historically, firms would outsource, we would have all of their data, and it really put them in a tough spot if we weren't delivering. So one of the things I said when I first got into this space was, well, my background is as a CFO and as an operator, and how do I protect myself against that? And, if you go back 10, 11 years, we were only 30 to 35% outsourced as an industry. One of the things that I used to hear a lot was, well, you have my data. I don't want to do a data migration. So my initial thought was, well, okay, let's take that off the table. Let's talk about what co-sourcing is and how co-sourcing can address your biggest concern that you're giving me for not wanting to outsource. And that really started the journey of what it means or how you define what co-sourcing is. But very simply put, we operate in our clients' platforms. Long way of saying it. I can be long-winded, so apologies.
No. Well, no, but I think the one point I feel I'm hearing you make is that on one hand, it's a simple concept, but the impact of it, once you go down that road, it opens up a lot of different possibilities of what you could be doing, which I want to get to further on. But to recap, so the traditional model would be outsourcing, in which if we reversed roles here, and I was the fund administrator and you were back in your former roles as a private equity CFO, I would have the GL on my side. I've got the role already. And then you have a deadline coming up. You wonder where the work is. And I'm saying, no, it's coming. But you can't really see it. If you aren't happy with my work because my team is changing or I'm missing deadlines, you've got to extract all that data. You might actually have a set of books on your side that you're checking against the GL that's on my side. And what you're saying is now I'm going to be, I don't know if this is the right thing to say these days, I'm going to be kind of naked before you in terms of I'm going to be doing the work on your side. All of the value that I'm creating, all the workflow is going to be visible to you. You're going to know exactly where I am with this thing that is due.
In a nutshell, that's exactly it. We're opening up what used to be a black box to our clients, the GPs. And we are saying, hey, the model has to change. We want to partner. We want to collaborate. We want to provide transparency to our clients because the market is changing. The needs are changing. The strategies around information and access to that information is changing. The technology is changing. 10 years ago, you couldn't do a lot of these things in an efficient and effective way. Today, you can't. So a lot of GPs are resetting what their own internal operating model is around data, how they're using it, how they're connecting it across different platforms. In our view is we don't want to be a problem in that process. We want to facilitate that process. We actually want to help move data if we need to, so that you can get it to the places without downloading and uploading and, you know, using a manual process to get to where you need to get to. So I think you described it quite well.
So then why are you virtually the only one of the fund administrators talking about co-sourcing as enthusiastically? I've seen others quoted where it's sort of like, yeah, if clients want to do it, we can do it. But you're an evangelizer.
Yeah, 100% we are. I think, one, we've spent a lot of time thinking about the operating model and what it means to be a co-sourcer. And I can, you know, talk about some of, you know, the challenges around it, because it's a trade-off with everything we do. But we, as a firm, our operating model has been built and designed with the vision of this from the beginning. When we started in January of 2020. What we've put in place is it allows and lends itself a lot more easily to a co-sourcing model. And there are reasons for that, but that's why we're so gung-ho about it, because it does two things. One, because we focused on it from day one, we can put an operating model that allows us to not succumb to some of the challenges of co-sourcing, like the incumbents will, because of how their operating model is built. And, you know, they're challenged on the legacy side because they're not built for this. They are built for the old model that is closed off, that isn't collaborative, that isn't integrated. Like you said, though, it doesn't mean everybody is against it. There are some folks that are reluctantly talking about it because it does make a lot of business sense and create some business opportunities, because there is a lot of interest and enthusiasm in the market for it. So you are seeing some folks kind of ignore what their operating model is in order to take advantage of certain business situations. But the reality is the market, whether it's legacy tech, whether it's legacy operating model, isn't built for a co-sourcing model that's scalable. So they have zero incentive to really push this model. And again, we're just the opposite. We're trying to build something from the beginning that allows us to scale this in a meaningful way, because that's what our strategy has been from day one. So we can do it because that's what we're building to do.
So for folks that we've talked to about this idea of saying something your competition is unwilling or can't say, if you were to say we're transparent, I feel like if Gale Strategies was working for the competition, we could say, no, we're more transparent. We might be able to cough up some numbers or something to show that. If I was working for your competition and I see that Mike Trinkus is saying co-sourcing, why would the competition say, no, we're not talking about co-sourcing? You shared a little bit. Can you share more about why the marketing and sales team of the competition is going to be held back and pointed to other messaging and really don't want to follow what Mike Trinkus is saying? Why would they be reluctant to say something like you're saying? Can you share more from their perspective? And I realize I'm asking you to speak in your competition's voice, but if you can...
Yeah, listen, if I were them, I would push the conversation away from co-sourcing because they're not built for it. Everything they've done, if they've created efficiencies, if they've created automation on their side, all goes out the window in a co-sourcing relationship. And that's one of the challenges with it. And I'll give you a perfect example of that. If we have an accounting platform that we're using, we invite our clients in, and we've created some integration with some other platforms that we're using, LP portals, waterfall tools, et cetera, et cetera. It's really easy to put 20 clients on that platform and then push that data out to those different platforms that we're using for each one of those 20 clients. In a co-sourcing relationship, if I have 20 clients and they're all co-sourcing, I now need to figure out the most efficient way to connect into those same systems through 20 different instances of that platform. The teams, in most cases, with many folks in the industry, just aren't built and prepared for that level of you know, work and sophistication with regard to automation and integration. We're constantly thinking about the best way to do that and integrate. And it's not easy, but we can do it. So that is one example of why somebody that's an incumbent will push their marketing firms to not really go all in on this co-sourcing, because again, it really is disruptive to the operating model of many folks in the industry, given they've been around for 10, 20, and 30 years, and there are legacy people, there's legacy technology, and it really is turning that operating model upside down by going into a co-sourcing relationship.
So there's a cost to be paid to do my work on your side. If I'm the fund administrator, I'm more exposed. And then there's a lot of systems investment, workflow investment, which, like I said, I think we'll get into. If I've got all this existing business that's easier and doesn't expose me to those things, then I'd rather try to compete against Mike on something else, but be open to co-sourcing. I mean,
yeah, listen, I mean, the reality is there's a lot of downside to co-sourcing when you initially look at it. But right. To me, that's a short-term view of how to look at what co-sourcing can do for you and for your clients. We don't want just clients. We're really looking to form partnerships with real collaboration with our clients. And the way that we do that is we expose ourselves a little bit in that we have to say, hey, if we're not doing the job we're supposed to do, if we're not transparent about what we're doing, how we're doing it, and who's doing it, isn't that a bit unfair to our clients? So we need to stand up a little bit and sit up a little bit straighter in our chair. And the reality is, if we do the job that we're supposed to do, whether we're co-sourcing or not co-sourcing, we're going to have a great client. And when we're in a co-sourcing relationship, it just opens up the possibility for a stronger partnership to really be strategic with how we help our clients out. It's really up to them in many ways to drive it, but it puts us in a position to really help them achieve what they're trying to achieve, because the finance departments continue to become more important on the side of the GP, and they need some partners on the operations side that can help them be more strategic, help them execute a better plan around data on their side. And that's really what we're trying to do. And if we do that, we're going to end up okay. And I think we're really going to execute on our vision, on our strategy of what this industry should look like.
So then on that basis, maybe there's a pre-agreed set of questions that I'm working through. I want to take the last question and move it next in the sequence, because I think we've kind of danced around the workflows and the investment and all the stuff that has to be in place to make this work. And I feel that that's really important, which is to say, we're talking about it at a theoretical level. What have you done and what needs to be done to actually make co-sourcing work? Because it sounds like the alternative could be, again, if I'm the fund administrator, I could be working on your side, on your software, and all I could do is really screw it up. It sounds like I need to have some workflows and some familiarity that I'm not going to be able to do on day one.
Well, no, it's certainly a journey, because in many instances with a co-sourcing, we'll jump into existing systems. So the first thing you have to do is kind of go in and understand what's there to begin with. then you need to do an assessment of what you need to fix, because oftentimes what we see is a process that's been developed over time for a specific firm. And yes, it works for that specific firm, but what you see is you may not have a broader expertise because you do the same things over and over. We like to come in with a much more well-rounded experience within the platform. And we usually can find some easy fixes in areas that we make our job easier, helps the clients, you know, in the long run, create some reporting, different ways of doing things. But in terms of workflows, yes, what we like to do is we really like to outline the relationship, document all of what that looks like, build in some workflows, some controls, build in some and use some other tools that we have at our disposal that work alongside of, on top of many of the different software technologies that we have to use. So it really becomes an operating infrastructure that we leverage that integrates and incorporates into all the different aspects of the relationship that we have with our clients. And that takes time. It's not a one quarter or two quarter process. It's a continuous process that you go through because the business change. One, we need to understand what you're doing. Two, what are some of the gaps that we're seeing? Then we have to address the gaps. And then it's, okay, here's our operating model today, but your business is evolving. You've raised another fund. Maybe you've added another investment vertical, whatever the case may be. So all of that information, that process, that cadence over time becomes a living and breathing document. So how do you change that on a go forward basis? How do you implement it, integrate it, et cetera, is part of what we do on a regular basis with clients.
But are you talking about doing that on a one-off basis, or is working with Four Pines different because across all clients, are you implementing, you have a CTO.
We do.
So yeah. Is it all people processes, or are you also looking at automation on the Four Pines side?
Oh, absolutely. Automation. Automation is a big part of it. You know, we've talked a lot about over the last couple of years about the shortage of accountants, where they go. Right. They're not studying at the same rate in college. So we've focused a lot on automation, being able to do things in an automated way that historically we've used people for. So we spend a lot of time on automation, and that's not a one-off. That is across our clients. That's a process that is core to our operating model. So again, I think that's probably a bit different than what you see in the industry. Our commitment to continuous improvement, project management, et cetera, whatever you want to call it. We are committed. We meet every, you know, quarter, every month to talk about a variety of these topics.
Well, so... I've met the Four Pines team, and I know the value you place in great people and disciplined execution, quality. I'm going to come back to the CTO. Let me explain why I'm coming back to the CTO. So when we talk to companies about not just making a claim and then trying to provide evidence on why you do it better than your competition, and then you just get into this, you know, he said, or what have you. Finding something that you can say that others can't. And it sounds like sometimes it can involve something where you actually give something up. You actually give more transparency to your clients because it's really hard for your competition to do that. But that also seems to mean that it can't just be a marketing, you know, trick. It can't just be something that you can say to someone else. You have to build a product that underlies right. that. And I guess what I'm wondering is in this world of software, do people need to really sort of think through not just the people processes, but the project management, the workflows, how to do this with the kind of regularity that software offers? Is there more sort of secret sauce behind the Four Pines, under the Four Pines hood, in addition to the excellent people?
Yes, I'll first say you know too much about Four Pines. No, kidding. Yeah, of course. We've built some of our own technology to do exactly many of these things that I've talk about related to collaboration, integration, transparency. We have a platform that our entire tech team has built alongside of the input from really almost everybody at the firm, because we do take input on a pretty regular basis. But yes, we use technology to help us with many of those pieces of the vision around the operating model in the industry. Again, focused on three areas: collaboration, integration, and transparency. And you can do that both at a people level as well as a technology level. So from tech to tech, people to people, internal, external, et cetera, et cetera. We think, again, it is a nice overlay to the co-sourcing model, because it achieves and addresses the same things that we're trying to address in co-sourcing, in just a different aspect of the relationship. And to your point, I could sit here and talk all day about it, but until you see it, it then makes sense, because technology is one of those things where, until you see it, you have a sense as to what exactly it's doing. It's hard. You could talk on and on, but you start to lose people after a while. So yes, we do have a platform that
Well,
we've built.
I mean, so again, we're a marketing PR firm, and so oftentimes we come to an existing, product. We come and we're asked to amplify. You have started really from the beginning. It seems Four Pines was built to do something that other folks didn't want to talk about or did not want to, propagate and for there to be more of. And so it's this is going to be a horrible analogy, but I used to, work in state government, and we had this we got a lot of great, media attention for this analysis we were doing of fish species. And so another state agency said, "Hey, we'd like to do one of those. You got so much media attention." It's like, well, the reason why we did that is because we had this intent. It took a lot of work. So I guess what I'm getting at is it's not just messaging. It's really the messaging and the product development being intertwined. So I guess my last question, given the amount of time we have, we spoke to Richard Change, who is a founder
Sure.
of his company. We're speaking to you. You're a founder. There are folks who are going to watch this that maybe they don't want to be founders. Maybe they want to enable because they're operating partners, or they're marketers on behalf of business units, or maybe they just don't want to necessarily launch something on their own. Can you talk about how you can build something that's defining the industry and talk about things that others are unwilling to say? Is it possible within like a portfolio that somebody else owns or within a large company? Can it be done? Or what would you recommend to folks that just aren't willing to become founders themselves?
Well, I think that's a question, you kind of have to look in the mirror and ask yourself and see what you're comfortable with. For me, I've been around the industry a long time. I think we have a vision and strategy that will work. Now, taking that strategy and executing is really hard, and you have to be a little courageous in order to do that, or stupid, maybe a little bit of both. I've been accused of both. So I'm okay with that. Can you do it as part of a larger organization? I suppose you could do it. It to me won't be the same. I think there's lots of guardrails that you run up against. But maybe a version of it, if you're a bit less, risk averse, that might be the spot for you. But I think for us, we're completely committed to this vision that we have, because we think it's the vision for the future. Some version of this is what our industry is going to look like. We're very good at what we do. We have a strong belief in our ability to deliver. So because of that, maybe rightly justified, maybe foolishly justified. I don't know. Time will tell, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years to see how we do. But I think we're off to a pretty good start. We have something, we're committed to it, and we're going to continue to build it regardless of what people say, regardless of, you know, whether or not the industry agrees with us. What I do know is our clients see the vision. Our clients are responding to the vision in a way that we expected, in a way that we anticipated. And whether or not we win a particular prospect or not doesn't always tell the full story. So you can't be deterred whether you're successful all of the time, because you're not going to be, because there are lots of reasons why folks make the decisions they do. It's the feedback loop that we get on a regular basis that makes us incredibly excited about what's in front of us. And it validates our strategy, our vision every single day. So I wouldn't want it any other way than to do it the way we're doing it as a bootstrap company with a vision and a scrappiness needed in order to build something that could profoundly impact the industry. And that's really what we're trying to do.
That is excellent. It's also, I think, a challenge maybe to others that want to enable or and empower innovation within, you know, their organizations, and the idea that you have to enable commitment and be willing to, if I hear you correctly, this is not going to be the right solution necessarily for everyone. It may be the right solution for everyone eventually, but you adhere to it because the results are going to speak for themselves, which they do seem to be. And we're talking to you because Four Pines has done, you know, tremendously well. We are at time. Oh my goodness, we're over time. If anyone has questions afterwards, let us know. Thank you very much, Mike, and thanks everybody for who held on.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.